The political world is becoming increasingly volatile and unpredictable, while at the same time having a profound impact on the lives of citizens across the globe. This is Polis Podcast, and I am Thomas Barton, the founder of Polis Analysis. Every week, I'll be in the virtual armchair with relevant experts from Polis teams to discuss the key developments shaping the political world. All we need is for you to join us on the virtual sofa. Hello, and welcome to the second episode of the Polis podcast. So what's today's topic? We're going to discuss the issue of fake news. It's mentioned a lot in the media and in public discourse, and we're going to look at why it's such a big issue and what we can expect to happen in terms of potential solutions. And with me, I've got today Jeremiah. Jeremiah is the head of research at Polis Analysis, and he has a professional background working in some of the world's largest tech companies. So he's extremely well positioned to talk about this issue of misinformation. So thanks, Jeremiah, for joining me. And to kick off, do you want to just tell us a little bit, what actually is this issue of fake news? We hear a few different terms: fake news, misinformation, disinformation, and they're all used interchangeably. What do they actually mean, and why has this issue come so much to the fore in recent years?
Yeah, of course. And thanks for having me on, Thomas. I'm super excited about the launch of this podcast and to be on the second episode of it. So fake news can be a really difficult subject to talk about, in part because it's used interchangeably with terms like misinformation and disinformation. Now, there aren't really any agreed upon definitions per se, but the way I like to think about it is fake news is news that is fake, deliberately fake, intended and sort of crafted to look like real news and then disseminated as though it's real news. Whereas misinformation is just simply incorrect information that is spread or disseminated with or without the intent to deceive. Sometimes people spread misinformation unknowingly. And then disinformation is bad information or false information that is spread with the express purpose of misleading, but it's not quite like fake news because fake news is packaged in such a way as to really resemble real news.
Okay, that's extremely helpful in discussing this issue. So now that you've given us a really good succinct definition of those key terms, can you just tell us a little bit for our listeners, why the issue of fake news has really become so prominent and why it's increasingly being talked about in public discourse, for instance?
Yeah, so I think in public consciousness, fake news really exploded when Trump came into office. I think because he talked about the liberal-leaning media as the fake news media, and so it's come into public consciousness for that reason. The real reason it's exploded as a problem is because of the advent of the internet and of internet companies and social media platforms. I think fake news has always existed. There's plenty of record of fake news existing all the way back into Roman, into the era of the Romans. But digital fake news, as we call it, so fake news spread around the internet, has the ability to reach millions of people very, very quickly. And so any single piece of bad information can cause a lot of people to be misled or misinformed about a certain topic. And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's really exploded. Now, I think another reason why it's such a big problem is, and so difficult to solve, is that content performance is much more important than content quality. So when we talk about what kind of content gets the attention of viewers, often it's sensationalized content that inspires emotion, incites hatred, makes people want to laugh or cry, right? It's not dry, fact-based analysis, the kind of thing that is more likely to be true. And so this makes it difficult to solve because we live in an attention economy where people where advertisers and new media companies and news companies are after people's attention, and they're after a few seconds of somebody's attention through headlines or whatnot. And so I think that's another reason why it's such a difficult issue to solve right now.
Sure, absolutely. And I suppose it's the job of Polis Analysis to provide that dry, boring, objective, impartial take on political developments. Although we try our best to make it as accessible and interesting and engaging as possible, because it's only natural that we want to empower citizens to actually understand issues from more of a fact-based perspective. Tell the listeners, Jeremy, why is it that the spread of fake news is actually such a problem? What is the threat that fake news poses to our listeners?
Yeah, of course. And real quick, you know, I think off air we were talking about how it's, you know, kind of funny that it's difficult to capture people's attention with political analysis, no matter how interesting or engaging you think it might be. And it is kind of interesting to be in a media company with that has a goal of capturing people's attention with analysis. And I think a lot of media companies that do kind of what we do face this sort of issue. It's not just something that Polis faces, it's companies all over the world. Even big journals that write about political analysis, right, or that write about politics, they too suffer from this, and they too, you know, they do think interesting things with headlines, and they manipulate the way that viewers interact with content in a way to make it more engaging. But anyway, yeah, to your point, or I guess your question about why it's such a big issue is, I think ultimately it undermines democracy, and I think a lot of people who talk about fake news and who research it draw this conclusion that that's the ultimate issue. And I think there are several reasons why that is. I think one reason is fake news has this way of polarizing groups of people who may be initially a little bit polarized and then only become more and more polarized as they read more fake news. I think one of the starkest examples of this is when the Internet Research Agency, which is a Russian troll farm, created two fake Facebook groups, one called the Heart of Texas, which was basically like an anti-Islam, anti-immigrant group, and one called Muslims for America. So the IRA created these groups in 2016, kind of as an experiment, it seemed like. Eventually, the groups grew in size. One had 300,000, the other had 250,000 people. And the IRA was able to organize a protest by the Heart of Texas against the Islamization of America, based on a bunch of false and fake reports about what Muslim immigrants were doing in the United States. And then on that same day, they were able to organize a counter protest by the other Facebook group in direct contradiction. And so this is sort of one of the reasons it undermines democracy so much, is these two groups were initially polarized. The IRA was able to leverage this polarization to make them even more divided. And by the end of it, you had two groups protesting completely incapable of having a mutual conversation over basic facts and basic principles in a good-hearted, good faith effort, attempt to try to, come to some sort of agreement about what's good for democracy. And so democracy definitely has this way of being undermined when people can't agree on basic facts and people are continually more and more polarized. And I think that's why it's so dangerous and part of the reason that we discuss it so much currently.
You're absolutely correct, and fake news, in my view at least, is an affront on democracy, and that's why in the Polis Analysis mission, we make clear that the reason why we are so religiously obsessed with trying to deliver fact-based analysis is because we believe it is the best way to deliver a more healthy democracy. Of course, everyone is always entitled to their own point of view, but when you can't even recognize the right of another individual to have a different view to your own, and when you can't even listen and talk to other people in a civil manner where you can appreciate the right to difference of opinion, and that's when things get increasingly dangerous. But also, I would argue, Jeremy, that actually not only is it an affront on democracy, but it's a life and death issue. Because if we use the pandemic as an example, we've seen the rise of anti-vaxxer movements, for instance. There's one interesting stat that always strikes me, which is that 58% of 18 to 24 year olds in the early days of the pandemic came across fake news sources. And that's scary, because 16 to 24 year olds as an age group state that Facebook and Twitter are among their most important sources of information. So young people, the people that we're trying to really help better navigate the political world for our own organization are big users of social media, and they've come across an infodemic of misinformation when it comes to COVID-19. And that can have real life and death consequences in terms of following health guidance on how to deal with the consequences of the COVID-19 outbreak and how to deal with the protections offered to you in the form of vaccinations. So it's clearly a big issue.
No, I mean, I couldn't agree more that it's a big issue. And I think, you know, that statistic you brought up sort of reminded me of another one that is, what is it, like just over 2/3 of Europeans say that they encounter fake news on a weekly basis. And I think that same number in the United States actually says that fake news causes a great deal of confusion. And that's one of the ways we get an infodemic. The trust in journalism and in media in both Europe and the United States, and actually all over Asia Pacific too, is way down. People just don't trust the news sources they read. And this is exactly why they can fall prey to fake source of information, right? If you can't trust your more credible institutions to provide you good information, then you might start to, you know, look elsewhere for information. And this is the way we get things like infodemics and bogus stories about weird COVID cures and the other thing. So anyway, yeah, I mean, I wanted to say that because I think it's wild. And I do think people recognize this problem. I think it's 83% of Europeans say that fake news is a problem for democracy. And around that same number say that fake news is just a problem in general. So I think this is something that people recognize as a big issue because I think it's impacting people's daily lives.
Yeah, that's a very powerful figure, that 83%. And talking therefore of Europeans, you know, it's clear this is a big issue. What are the potential solutions our listeners can expect to unfold in the near future to deal with this issue? And you know, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about a couple of solutions that the European Union is proposing. So, given EU citizens are clearly aware of the risk that fake news poses to democracy, what is the European Union, for instance, trying to do to solve the problem of fake news?
Yeah, so when we discuss top-down solutions to fake news, one of the reasons governments, namely the EU, right, are stepping in is because tech companies haven't provided many solutions. So tech companies sort of fidget with their moderation policies based largely on public perception and public scrutiny. So when Twitter and Facebook got criticized heavily in 2016 for allowing a lot of fake news to be spread on their platforms ahead of the 2016 presidential elections, they changed their moderation policies in advance of the 2020 elections, right? But generally, tech companies and social media platforms are very reactionary to fake news, and they really are just trying to do enough to stay out of the scrutiny of the public, right? So in step, governments. In the US, not much has been done, mostly because of First Amendment rights and protections and that we won't really discuss. But in the EU, you know, there have been several legislative proposals. Neither of these, you know, for our listeners have been, you know, are set in stone. They're just proposed legislation, but there's two big pieces of legislation called the Digital Services Act and Digital Markets Act. And together they govern a whole range of media behavior. But when it comes specifically to the topic of fake news, I think one of the things the Digital Services Act promises to do is to introduce new obligations to platforms to disclose to regulators how their algorithms work, you know, so like sort of opening up the hood and showing national regulators what's going on at these tech companies, what their algorithms are doing, how their platforms work. Additionally, the Digital Services Act proposes that media companies are transparent about decisions to remove content. So why does a social media company decide to remove one bit of content versus another, right? There needs to be more transparency around this. And then the last thing is the EU hopes that through the Digital Services Act, social media platforms will expose the way advertisers target their users. Because obviously data collection is a big way these companies make money. And a lot of people feel very uncomfortable with the fact that their data gets shared and sort of farmed out to advertisers for advertisers to profit from. So this is still in the works, and who knows what will come of these proposed legislations. But this is just some of the stuff that governments are trying to do to sort of fill in the void, because tech companies themselves are not spearheading this effort.
Sure. And I think that's, thank you for sort of laying out the land and helping our listeners try and anticipate what they could expect to come next. But you used a key term right at the start. You talked about the top-down solutions that are being proposed by governments and supranational institutions like the European Union, given the vacuum that some tech companies have created, given that they haven't necessarily taken as much action as they could have done on this issue. But I want to talk a little bit about the bottom-up dimension to this. And you know, if we stick with the European Union for a moment, we know that through their sort of proposals in relation to how to secure Europe's digital transition, you know, they talk a lot about in the digital decade, which is the sort of big ticket item for the EU to sort of help digitalize European economies and societies. They talk a lot about digital skills and the need to ensure that citizens are equipped with the skills they need to be able to navigate the new digital society and era that we'll be living in. And they also talk about the need for individuals to develop, you know, the ability to think more critically, to be more skeptical when presented with information, to also, you know, address a variety of sources from across the political spectrum when trying to inform oneself about political issues. Do you think that citizens take their responsibilities, Jeremy, seriously when it comes to the fake news issue? I mean, if I can just give you one powerful stat, but only one in five individuals on social media actually takes action when they are confronted with a fake news media source on their news feed. So are citizens taking this responsibility seriously? And will they take it sufficiently seriously that for the fake news issue to be mitigated in the longer term? Will regulation be enough? Or do we need our citizens to take greater action too, is the crux of my question.
Yeah. So I do think that regulation likely won't be enough and that it'll eventually come down, or I guess ultimately come down, to individuals taking responsibility of their information diet, as I like to say, in their own lives. Whether or not they're sort of aware of the problem or doing enough, I mean, I think there's definitely a lot of awareness. So, you know, again, with this two-thirds seems to be the number of the day, but two-thirds of US adults say that they've seen fake news on their own news sources. So they're aware of it, right? Like we said earlier, 83% of Europeans think it's a problem for democracy. I think people are definitely aware of it. Whether or not they're taking measures to solve it is actually something that we don't really know. It's, I mean, hard to say what people are doing with their own information lives right at home. I do think there are a lot of things that individuals can do, though. Whether or not they're doing them yet is a different issue. I think one thing we can do is we can make sure to read from a variety of sources. I think you can have viewpoints from across the political spectrum. I think echo chambers and thought bubbles and these rabbit holes that people go down are very dangerous, because that is when information that opposes narratives that you're used to or worldviews that you're forming become harder and harder to believe. So I think it's very important to maintain, again, to use this word, information diet, a balanced information diet with variety of news sources from all over the spectrum. I think there's that. I think it's also important to engage deeply with the information that you're consuming. So don't just read headlines, read reports, right? Often you will find that news stories will take a very small bit of like a scientific study and make a whole news story around that, when there's actually a lot more context and a lot more nuance. So maybe read fewer things. So again, read a wider variety of things, but read fewer things and read them in more detail. I think that's another thing too. And most importantly, be very, very, very careful that what you're sharing is true information, right? I think a lot of people spread, when we say misinformation, the reason I like to use misinformation the way I defined it earlier in the podcast is that often it's people unknowingly spreading false information. And so be very careful about the way you share information online and that what you're sharing is true, because I think that is the best way that citizens can get ahead of the problem and can mitigate the problem.
And that's extremely interesting, Jeremy. And that's hopefully very helpful for our listeners. We don't often get these sort of tangible, practical solutions clearly stated for individuals to take action. We don't always need to wait for governments and tech companies to do their bit. I like the term information diet, and this is perhaps a cheeky comment, but adding policy analysis to one's information diet would definitely be a healthy solution to the fake news problem. I suppose the last question I have for you, Jeremy, is one about how optimistic you're feeling on this issue, because you're based in the United States, and I know we've spoken about this issue a little bit in the context of Europe, but the National Intelligence Council in the US published a Global Trends report in April of this year. In fact, Policy Analysis covered that report in one of our daily briefings. And that report gives a sort of 15 to 20 year longer term horizon scan of some of the big global issues and challenges we can expect to face. And one of the issues that really struck me that was highlighted in that report was the fact that actually it is anticipated that societies are going to become increasingly polarized, in the next 20 years, and individuals are going to become increasingly dependent on very specific media sources of information. And by the way, those sources of information they'll be using are those that are already fully aligned to their political preferences and views. So my concern is that this report has essentially uncovered that we're going to become increasingly divided, increasingly narrow-minded in the sort of media sources we interrogate to get our information, and we're going to become less capable of listening to one another. So I don't mean to end this on a negative note, but do you think, Jeremiah, that that we are really going to be able to turn the tide on this big fake news challenge that is confronting our listeners from across the globe?
Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question. And I'm naturally a pessimist, and so I think maybe for that reason I tend to be pessimistic about this. And because of reports like the one you cited, I mean, I think when people really look at this issue, it's hard to be optimistic about it, because the tendency over the last decade and even over the last two decades has been more polarization, more rabbit hole effects, and less sort of ability to have cohesive conversations across the aisle. I think one of the real scary things potentially is the advent of deep fake technology, which has been around for a while. Essentially, what a deep fake is synthetic media created to mimic the voice or countenance of another person. It has really cool commercial applications in movies and commercials and all this kinds of stuff. But its application in information can be very scary, because you think about sort of the very dystopian view where someone can take part of Boris Johnson's voice, something he says, and literally take his exact voice and put it over a message that he didn't deliver, and then release it as though he made that message. And then we have no idea whether Boris Johnson said it or not. That's the kind of dystopian stuff in the future that makes me really afraid. But I do think that if individuals, take heed of the kinds of advice that I gave, but also the kinds of advice that people are giving all over in sort of combating this in their personal lives, I do think that there's a way to mitigate this issue and certainly to slow it down. But it's hard to say, given how little movement there's been in tech companies and how little governments really can do about this, that I feel optimistic about it.
Well, look, let's hope, to sort of counter your pessimistic tone, that actually if citizens take their responsibility seriously, and if tech companies take their responsibilities as platform providers seriously, and if governments deliver the regulation required, that maybe it's not too late to deal with this issue. Well, I want to thank everyone for listening. I hope that everyone will agree this was a really interesting conversation. Polis Analysis, in its own way, is trying to help be part of the solution of this growing fake news issue, and we're trying to help individuals in particular. And as part of that, in addition to all the political analysis that we deliver, and believe me, Jeremy's researchers work extremely hard to fact check their analysis, to ensure that they interrogate a range of sources of information. In addition to all of that work we do, we are actually going to be launching a fake news awareness campaign. So keep your eyes peeled for that, because we'll be hopefully talking about this issue more in the coming weeks. And please do join me in next week's Polis podcast episode with our lead editor, Adam. And I'll be talking to him about Middle Eastern politics, and we'll be discussing sort of the key political leaders in the Middle East that have recently emerged onto the scene. So thanks so much for listening. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining me, and I hope to be with you all next time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Thomas.
We hope you enjoyed this Polis podcast episode. At Polis Analysis, we are fully devoted to helping individuals better navigate the political world. So we would love to hear your thoughts, and please do share any suggestions you may have for future Polis podcast episodes. Follow the Polis podcast channel on Spotify to access our weekly episodes. And if you want to better navigate the political world with accessible, fact-based and impartial analysis of global politics, then sign up to our free newsletter at www.polisanalysis.com. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks so much for listening.